morning, Cascadia. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, June 23rd, 2009, and this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The El Paso Corporation out of Houston, Texas, is ramming a 42-inch natural gas pipeline from Wyoming through Utah, Nevada, all the way to Mellon, Oregon.
Polls show that the public prefers a public health plan.
And Waldo Lake is cleared for takeoff. Gentlemen, rev your engines.
Portland area weather, sunny, high near 78. Tonight, partly cloudy, low around 55. And then tomorrow, increasing clouds, but a beautiful day.
Well, first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Apparently, a company called the El Paso Corporation, it's of course, you guessed it, from Texas, is planning a 42-inch natural gas pipeline. It's starting in Wyoming, running through Utah and Nevada, all the way to Mellon, Oregon. Now, obviously, this ties in with our own struggle against the liquefied natural gas industry. FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, says, well, yes, there will be trouble for the environment, but what the hell? We just pay off the First Nations, the hermits, and the hippies, and get on with it. The question today, why do they always put these things in remote places where the people are few, far between, and generally not in a position to sue? Very often pipelines and power lines ram straight through areas that are sacred, that are really the property, the belongings, part of the actual body and blood and soul of Indian nations. Here to consider that question is Ronnie Jeffrey. He's with the Native Forest Council. Good morning, Ronnie, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, that's the answer, is they do it because they can, and not enough of us are paying attention to what's going on out there. Annie Leonard, The Story of Stuff.
Yes.
Tune into it on YouTube, and you can see someone critiqued it, the man who does the show, How the World Works, and it's just incredible how many people fall for his baloney that makes her look silly.
Yeah, so this pipeline, I don't know if you had a chance to look at the route. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission makes it difficult to trace the route, and
I'm
of course
sure
El Paso has no interest in divulging that to the general public.
Even if they did, there's not enough public that pays attention and willing to fight against it. We need to stand up now.
There are so few people in these areas that they figure, well, and of course the irony is that these are remote, beautiful places. In many cases, they are sacred to the people to whom they rightfully belong. A lot of the land that this pipeline is going through is really the essence of whole peoples.
We need to pull together using the internet. That's our answer. Big companies having the money to donate to help is over. All of us doing a little bit, all connected. We can get these little remote areas protected.
Here we sit in Oregon, more or less at the end of the pipeline. I would argue that it is our responsibility to stand up to FERC and to the El Paso Corporation and say not on our watch.
Who else is it? It has to be ours.
Because Wyoming, Utah, and Nevada are not going to do it. They're down with this pipeline.
Ridiculous.
Ronnie, can you tell people what actual real steps here and now people can take?
The only step I think that we can take right now is all of us pulling together and communicating with each other on the internet, and a million people throwing a dollar in a week is just as good as one rich guy buying up a congressman for $1 million, you know? Everybody pulls together and we can do something. That's the only way.
Thank you so much for that, Ronnie. I especially thank you for standing in for Tim Hermack, who is out of town camping, so this was rather a surprise that we pounced on you at the very last minute, so I want to thank you very much for that.
Yep.
My guest has been Ronnie Jeffrey with the Native Forest Council.
More political capital for the environment yesterday As expected, the Oregon Senate repassed a bill to pay for removing four Klamath River dams. There's a 2% surcharge on the Oregon ratepayers of Pacific Power. Governor Ted Kulongoski, PacifiCorp, and other advocates of the bill have maintained this is the best way to improve fish passage, cap ratepayers' rates for taking out the dams, and protect them from the potentially higher costs of upgrading the dams to win a new federal license. The House added language returning the money to ratepayers if the dams aren't removed.
How swiftly the screw turns sometimes, especially when it's driven by public outrage. Yesterday, the Oregon House passed a bill extending state protection to the Metolius River Basin. The bill goes back to Governor Ted Kulongoski now. The Gov has been fighting to make the Metolius an area of critical statewide concern. That's, of course, a never-before-used designation that strictly limits development there. And, of course, it all turned on one vote, and that one vote came from Representative Larry Galizio, Democrat of Tigard. Galizio got a call from the Gov and massive public support for changing his vote.
The dream was for Waldo Lake, high in the Cascades, to remain a serene, pristine sanctuary from the stench and roar of the burbs. The reality is that the U.S. Forest Service won't enforce its ban on gas-powered motors at the lake. None other than Lane County timber heir Stephen Stewart was behind the decision. The Forest Service envisioned Waldo Lake as a semi-primitive, non-motorized environment. At this point, gas motors and float planes will be allowed until further notice.
Let's see. He is a timber company guy. We're going to allow all of these motorized vehicles in the Cascade Range. I wonder if we could put those two elements together and come up with clear-cutting more of the Cascades.
Not far.
We live in a corn-fed world. Now we're going to be flying in corn-fueled planes. The biofuel industry was languishing until Boeing stepped up to the plate and knocked it out of the park. Boeing says plant-driven fuels perform favorably as, wait for it, jet fuel.
Wind energy would be a breath of fresh air were it not for the environmental problems and NIMBY attitude taken by those who live close to the turbines. Now the Umatilla Planning Commission will consider a proposal to keep wind turbines out of the Blue Mountains of eastern Oregon. The no-turbine zone is an amendment to the county's comprehensive plan proposed by Richard Jolly of Milton Freewater and the Blue Mountain Alliances. It seeks to designate the area as a visual resource. Jolly says the companies involved were not forthcoming with their plans. Currently, the only publicly acknowledged project for the Blue Mountains is being developed by an Irish company.
Well, you can shop on it, have sex on it, get advice and spiritual salvation on it, and now you can register to vote on your computer. The Oregon Senate has approved the bill. Secretary of State Kate Brown says that online registration will bring more voters, particularly young voters, into the election process. The bill now heads back to the House, which previously approved it for agreement on amendments made in the Senate. Then, of course, it's on to the governor for the ink.
Yesterday, schools got a look at their funding future. The Oregon House passed a $5.8 billion plan, which Governor Kulongoski will veto. The veto won't stick, but it's still a heads-up for Oregonians who want good education but aren't willing to pay for it. So at this point, legislators and the Gov are at odds about how much money K-12 should get. Both the House and Senate passed the legislation with more than the two-thirds majority necessary to override the veto.
Well, it isn't the same as having a real income, but it's better than the slap in the belly with a wet fish. The state of Oregon has increased jobless benefits. But wait, don't break out the cheap champagne yet. The increase won't apply to people who are currently getting benefits, only to those who file on and after the effective date, which is June 28. For those lucky, unlucky few, the change will bring the minimum payment to $115 and a maximum $493. Not that much to celebrate.
Yesterday, markets all across the world took a nosedive after the World Bank warned that the downturn would be deeper than it was previously predicted. The more optimistic investors reined in their expectations for the global economy. The warning tapped into a growing mood in the markets that the improvement in the economic data hasn't been strong enough to justify the stock market rally since March. Banks in the U.S. that survived the purge, however, are predicting record-breaking bonuses for their executives.
And, of course, it's yet another windfall for the insurance industry. With fewer and fewer people employed, that's fewer and fewer people who are being given health benefits through their work. Polls are in, and they show that the public overwhelmingly prefers a public health plan. The choice comes down to this. Do you want insurance company bureaucrats telling you you can't get there from here, or do you want a government agency with at least a modicum of responsibility to the public deciding the fate of the national prostrate? There was an article in the Sunday New York Times, not an article, excuse me, it was actually the lead editorial, a public health plan, it says, and of course the New York Times comes down quite soundly on the side of a public health plan. It goes on to outline a number of different options, going from a really tough, strong plan that would work for most people and still preserve some of the bells and whistles that we normally associate with the private insurance industry. Nonetheless, there are other factors to consider, and joining us this morning to talk about some of those, we're welcoming David Rosenfeld, an independent reporter, David Rosenfeld with the Lund Report. Thanks so much for being with us, David.
Hi, Chris. Thanks.
Well, so we've got this article in the New York Times. I didn't go into any detail on their variations on the same theme, but what it actually amounts to is a public plan. It starts on the spectrum at this very strong and workable system and runs the gamut down to more or less a state by state solution to the problem. Tell us how you see the private insurance industry's position as a player in all this.
Well, private insurers are clearly against this idea, and I think that one of the easiest ways to understand it is sort of a Medicare-like program that everybody can buy into, or that would be subsidized for those with low income. And the New York Times, with their editorial, of course, being backed up by a public poll that they reported on the day before, I think, showed out of 900 people, 72% favored some kind of more government involvement in a government-run health plan that they could buy into. And over the weekend, or late last week, we saw the debate over the cost of the plan. The Senate Finance Committee, which is really the leader in actually drafting a bill, their plan came out to amount to $1.6 trillion. And a lot of conservative Democrats and Republicans, of course, had a lot of sticker shock on that. And as President Obama said just this morning, and a lot of other people are repeating, is that that's not necessarily new money. This is money that we are already currently spending in the healthcare system, which amounts to close to $2.5 trillion a year. And the question is whether we want to refunnel that through the government, put more, have more control over that money and where it's spent, and by doing so, be able to reduce any other costs that we may be incurring in other areas on healthcare.
Thanks so much for that. My guest, of course, has been David Rosenfeld, independent reporter, journalist, and contributor to the LundReport.org. Thanks so much for being with us, David.
This has been Headlines and Commentary from Air Cascadia for Tuesday, June 23rd, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering this morning is Janet Anderson. The interim KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillian Shannon, sitting in for Kathleen while she's gone. And I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO FM, in Portland, Oregon. Your support and your support only keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.